back to a very special episode of the Exterminatus podcast. That's right, episode 200. That snuck up on you. It snuck up on all of us as well. It's been an awesome ride, and we're here to celebrate with my co-host Ray.
Hello.
And we've got Robert joining us from Team Spy Club. How are you?
I am good. I have a very special surprise for you guys at the end of the
thing. That's called a tease in the business. And to be honest, Ray came up with the idea with the suggestion from Scari. Asked Robert to jump in, and he went full head first into it. So we're likely to see what happens with this. Jim is actually celebrating Canadian Thanksgiving. So I am an ugly American who's unaware of holidays outside of the continuous 48 states. So to all our Canadian friends, happy Thanksgiving. I hope you guys have a wonderful time with friends and family in celebration there, and also be safe. So in the meantime, we will plunge forward. Lots of news this past week. Many of the internet content providers who get free copies of codices from Games Workshop got their hands on the Black Templar Codex. Guys, what are your initial impressions of what the devoted of the Emperor have to offer?
I know for me, with the little bit that I've been able to watch and see from people like Phil and Tabletop Tactics, it's the Black Templars seem very rounded as a Marine faction, outside of the fact that they are the ones that get all of the initial toys, like longer range flamers and crazy movement shenanigans. I mean, most Marines can do that anyway, but they get it and like, oh yeah, no, we're always in the assault doctrine. Like, you might as well just get rid of the first two.
Yeah, I saw that. I just went, what? And yeah, the two stratums to be aware of course, is it's a devout push or devout short. I forgot what it basically allows them to make extra movements, which I was like, oh my God, that's, and there's a kind of a fade and fire effect where they can go not only towards the closest enemy, but also the closest objective, which I was like, that's kind of rude.
Yeah, that's the updated devout push. It's either or, so it's, yeah. So it's either, if you're not in engagement range, so it's not, you don't get to make a pylon move anymore. So it's at least you're outside of fighting me. You can't come in to fight me for free. So at that point, you go towards the enemy or the objective, or if you're engaged, they have you do a normal pylon move.
Very powerful. So I think that's going to be up there. Also, you get the full Primaris range. I think that was, unlike other supplements where you always had to, or at least in the old days when they had their standalone codices and they come up with a new Space Marine unit, you have to wait for it to update. Nope, they get the full range of units ready to their disposal, plus their Crusader units and all the upgraded characters, which got quite the glow up.
Yeah, I didn't look much into them, but they look cool.
Well, that's the first of the chapters to go full Primaris.
I'm sure there's a lore explanation for it. I just, at this point, I'm kind of, what's going on here, guys?
At that point, I guess it's just kind of who can get more Swole, Helbrecht, or Grimaldus. But
because it's a contest.
Yeah. Every time I hear Grimaldus, though, I still think of Grimaldi's pizza place here in Phoenix. So.
I mean, I fully expect him to show up with a pizza and go, if you don't eat this pizza, you're a heretic.
If you don't like deep dish, you're a heretic, apparently. So, but quite a bit. And one thing I thought was interesting was the vows, which, I mean, right off the bat, everybody keeps talking about the one that gives the army-wide 5-plus invul. But the whole idea that you can pick that pre-game, does not need to be on your list, is just hugely powerful. And just look at that and go, like, whoa.
Yeah, it gives them a lot of better tactical nuance, because let's say you're going into a Grey Knight or Thousand Suns matchup or even Eldar, you can take the Abhor the Witch, which means like, oh, I get better at killing psykers, so don't take action-based secondaries, or I want to hit you better, you can take either one of the other two really killy ones. But if you're just kind of like, I don't know how to deal with this, that's where you can take the, oh, I'm a 3-up transhuman, I have a 5-up invuln. Sadly, you lose the benefit of cover, which kind of makes that vow the worst one, because obviously you would rather have a 2-up armor and cover than a 3-up armor all the time.
Yeah, so going back to what you said about Ahor the Witch, so give you an idea. Once per battle in your moving phase, if there's an enemy psyker in your opponent's army until the end of the phase at 3 inches to the move characteristic of models in this unit, which from what I understand is pretty much army-wide. right? There's, is there any, what units don't benefit from vows that I'm kind of trying to see?
If it only specifies core, then it might leave out some select vehicles, but that's, I don't play Marines anymore, so I've stopped keeping track.
I'm just double checking here. Super Doctrine, If you're playing, you have to be pure Black Templars to get these. And no, it does not say that there were, as far as I can tell, I could be wrong. And if we are, just go ahead and message us on our Facebook page. Core is not a requisite. So everyone in the army gets this as long as you're completely Black Templar. You also get to reroll ones if you are attacking a Psyker. And then you give up, though, as Robert mentioned, while enemy Psyker is within 18 inches of this unit, the unit cannot perform any action. So I don't know if I want to do this against Grey Knights, unless you make sure you don't have to do any actions. But yeah, taking Rod with that would be a bad idea.
Yeah, that kind of scenario is something that, if you're choosing to take that against a psychic heavy army, you plan for not taking action-based secondaries as a fallback. So, like, you take Engage, you take Grind, you take whatever that doesn't have you stop yourself from going towards the witch and punching it in the face.
The other one of the other vows that came up, interesting, mentioned fallback. So the vow allows you, while you're within engagement range of enemy units, if a combat doctrine is active in your army, this unit gains a bonus of assault doctrine instead of the combat doctrine. So that's what you mentioned earlier. I'm in assault doctrine all the time. If that's not enough, each time this unit fights until the fight is resolved, add one to the attack's characteristics of models in that unit. This is not cumulative with additional grants granted by the shock assault ability. The only drawback to this unit cannot fall back. So, is that really a detriment?
I think it would be some kind of detriment if you were taking something like bikers where you need them to be mobile and you just wanted them to go in and touch something. And then the unit ended up not dying because of a lucky invuln or something. But outside of that, the things that will benefit most from that obviously are Terminators, Lightning Claws, because who doesn't love additional attacks on top of additional attacks on top of everything else?
So just give you an idea of what the other two vows are. Suffer not the unclean to live. This is pretty much the old one. Auto wounds on 6. In melee against non-vehicle units, the only downside to this, you have to charge the closest model if it's within 12 inches, and also a non-aircraft model, so you can't use your planes to screen these guys out. But the one everyone's talking about is Uphold the Honor of the Emperor, and this one is kind of, like I said, the neutral all things. So the passion stops you from receiving the benefits of cover, so apparently you stand out and go, you must fight me, like a bad karate movie, but you gain a 5-up invul when you do so. So, and you also get a mini transhuman. So all rolls of 1s and 2s to fail, automatically fail all wounding. Like I said, bad news is you cannot benefit from a cover save. So like you said, that could be your all purpose. I don't know what I'm fighting, so I'm just going to pick this. So really neat stuff. We'll see these on the tabletop in no time, because this is one of those armies. Some of the Grey Knights, I don't see much hobby lag. If you've got the models, you're good to go. And honestly, if you have Marines lying around, paint them black and you're good to go. The only hardest part is, you know, painting white over black, and there's going to be a ton of tutorials on that. So, but I'm scared of this army. I still have PTSD from 3rd edition when they came out. Back then, if you killed them, instead of falling back, they would lunge forward at you even further, so they would get closer to assault range. So that was always scary. And they were the original Rhino Rush army, so that was always fun.
I'm so glad I didn't play back then, because I would have been like, cool, I'm going to kill all the things. Why are you next to me?
So I actually remember this game, because this is actually my first taste in playing that guy in a tournament. So he did his Rhino Rush, and I'm like, cool, I know what's going to happen here. So he does his Rhino Rush, the guys jump out, and they're sitting in front of me. Fine, I shoot them. Instead of falling back, he falls forward. Okay, great. His turn, he charges into me. And back then, this is pre-Codex Necrons. So I'm sitting there with my 4 pages from White Dwarf that were laminated. I'm like, here's my whole Codex. Oh, are you next to me? Cool. Veil of Darkness. I teleport to the other side of the table. So now his entire Rhino Rush is sitting in my deployment zone by themselves going, what do we do now? The look on that guy's face was just priceless. He was so angry. He says, can I see your codex? Here you go. Hold on 1 second. He asks his friend for a copy of the codex. I'm like, did you really think I photoshopped my own codex to make these rules? He was dead set against that I could veil the darkness out of close combat. He was so angry. So to this day, I always like, oh, a Black Templar player? You're a cheeseball. But that was many years ago, and I may have grown up a little bit since then. So
no, it's always funny to veil of darkness out of combat. Your opponent just goes, ah, yeah, you're in front of my entire like line of cannons.
Yep.
So bye-bye.
Other news. We talked about it briefly last episode. And the role of Flyer. So as we all talked about, the LGT final lasted a whopping 20 minutes after turn one started, as Manichima basically raced forward with all his AdMech Flyers and with a combination of various stratagems pretty much decimated his opponent, and he conceded on turn one. So it's finally caught up to the internet. Something needs to be done about this. So I'll pose that to you two gentlemen. What needs to be done about this?
I'll let Ray go first, because, I have reasons.
Well, I don't know. At first, I thought the whole thing where the Flyers couldn't take object. Maybe I hate the idea of limiting something just because you have one or two people take something to an extreme. But that might be the only thing you can do.
Yeah, that's definitely a softer restriction than what some people might want. Because, I mean, one other list variant that's nowhere near as effective right now is the Freebooters Orc list, which can take anywhere from 3 to maybe 5 Flyers if they cut any extra fat. But Orcs aren't nearly as efficient as AdMech shooting, because we hit on 5s, they hit on... So, at that point, the big restriction would be is like, oh, you can only have 3 Flyers in your entire list would be the first restriction and make things more balanced.
Well, are they using... So, first off, the first problem is AdMech, which is, I think, when I looked at the Stats Center last week, they were the second highest winning army, just behind Drukhari, although I might have
just
those...
Just south of Drukhari, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's those who are the top. The lists we're seeing with the heavy amount of flyers, is it multiples of one of the flyers? Or do they have a couple of them?
From my understanding, it's several copies of the bombers and several copies of the gunships. That's the basic understanding that I can get at, because I've not looked at those lists myself, because if I look at AdMech, my head explodes.
It's the Stratoraptor, whichever that one is. I believe that's the...
Okay.
I think that's the gunship, yeah.
So, it's 160 points. It's got 2, range 48, assault 2, strength 9, AP minus 3, damage 3 plus 3. Not to mention, 2 heavy phosphor blasters, which is not showing. Looking at right now. 2 of the Cognis heavy stubbers, and it looks like that's it.
And most players are upgrading those to Cognis las cannons, apparently.
Yeah, and I know one of our local AdMech players, Tim, also on Smite Club. He argues that one of the stupidest thing that these flyers can do is their chafe launcher abilities or something like that, which is -1 damage, applies all the time.
So at first it doesn't seem like a big deal because it's shooting, but it's shooting and close combat, which is bizarre.
Yeah.
And
so like the big split between the AdMech flyers versus all other flyers is because of certain ways that they interact with the other stratagems. Like I don't know if Wrath of Mars can work on them, because I've never seen Tim use it on them, because he uses it on his Rangers to melt whatever he look at. But otherwise, it is more of their bases are so large that you can fly 6 of them in a rectangle and your opponent can never leave that area.
Yeah, also the stratagem piece of that, not only is it cover up, tremendous amount of board presence, even though they shouldn't, they're flyers, for crying out loud. Benediction of the Amasaya, being Mars, so they get bonuses up the wazoo for being both Skitari and the AdMech. So you're looking at each flyer is getting 2 rerolls to hit, 1 reroll to wound, and a damage reroll. So it makes them incredibly efficient when they're Mars. And then you also have Machine Gun Spirit Resurgence, which is adds an even more, can kill. If you kill it, it can blow up in your face. So it just makes it just disgusting. And then you also have the bomber, which adds to it as well. And it's interesting, you have two lists, from one from England, one from America. And that's, I think, what was really telling. At first, a lot of people were saying, well, the LGT terrain didn't allow itself to be defended against. How do you defend against a flyer? I mean, that's kind of how what they're meant to do. And as Ray mentioned, it's a T7. And Robert, you mentioned minus one damage. It's a flying dreadnought, for crying out loud. And I don't know. It's just, when you look at the thing, I'm like, is that really supposed to be that durable? It's just bizarre. So
yeah, when you compare that to something like any of the orc flyers, which are T6, 4-up save, just minus one to hit, the Admech flyers might as well be literal dreadnoughts with jetpacks, because the DACA jets and stuff just get torn to shreds by whatever looks at them funny.
Yeah, the DACA jet, you know, when you look at it, it looks like an old F-86 Super Saber from Vietnam War. And I like the idea that it's bristling with guns and he just, you know, spray and pray, you know, that part's. But like I said, if mm-hmm. you roll hot, it's going to eliminate something pretty quick. But anyway, so here's some other suggestions from the internet coming around. The most radical would be eliminate flyers from the game. It's not a game. Right.
Which won't happen.
It's a game.
Those people, you always have them.
Yeah. Get rid of it's not allowed in certain detachments. So basically a patrol, only like a patrol would have zero flyers in it. So you'd have to take a battalion and limit it to 0-2 or something like that, which I think it already is in a battalion. I don't think any,
yeah.
I don't even think in a brigade it's up to 1-3, I think.
Yeah, no, most if not all detachments only allow for up to two flyers, period.
So that's so the idea is make it 0-2 per army, which I'm kind of like, another thing was fix Mars. So that's what makes it broken, though. For example, the ability to give canticles to Skitarii units, you have to be within 6 inches of a tech priest. I think that's a little more, because I think that fixes a lot of other problems that Admech have at this point. And I'll just throw in my for once, Forge World got it right. I think the old Forge World flyer rules, were better. That was simply, rather than being a minus one to hit, it added 12 inches to the range. So suddenly you have fewer shots. You're not always in double tap range. And flamers had no chance of hitting a flyer, which I still don't understand why you can do that in this game. But the other thing, too, is having played historical games for a long time, I don't remember any of my Spitfires or Fokkers and whatnot being as resilient as a Panzer. So I don't understand why there's T7 flyers. Matter of fact, I don't understand why any flyer in the game is above T5 or T6, especially when you look at what they're called, not jet bikes, the land speeders and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's if they were to bump it down from T7 to T6, that'd probably start easing a lot of things, because that makes it so that way stuff like autocannons are wounding it on threes instead of fours. Like, sure, it's still minus one damage, but I'm pretty sure autocannons are usually only one damage anyway. So at that point, it makes it more fragile just by stats. And if you go, oh, I'm plus one to wound with a Leviathan Dreadnought and a Storm Cannon Array, you're wounding that thing on twos instead of threes and all this other balancing stuff that give people a chance to actually shoot it out of the sky.
So whatever your thoughts are about how to fix this menace of the week, hit us up on our Facebook page. With a link to this particular episode. Love to hear what you guys have to say. Coming up this October 30th, celebrate Warhammer Day with two new special models. Cool-looking Marine and even cooler-looking Vampire. What do you guys think?
Why wasn't the Marine painted orange?
Because everything's Ultramarines, haven't you noticed?
But even Ultramarines can be spooky. No, I think the models are really cool. Honestly, what I think they should have done is they should have... This is really a silly question, but they should have taken all of the models that... Like, oh, here's Warhammer Day. You can choose this model to be your model for subscribing to Warhammer Plus and stuff instead of the Assassin or the Mega Boss.
Yeah. I still haven't got my Assassin yet, by the way.
Well, I think...
Well, I mean, it's 9 months?
Supposed to be shipped...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But luckily,
I got one.
But no,
here's my thing about the Warhammer Day models. If you're not at all interested in Age of Sigmar and you happen to want the Lieutenant, you have to get it through the website because you can only acquire the Lieutenant from Games Workshop. I understand that they want to push people to purchase from their web store, but if you're going to have brick and mortar stores and have the celebration there, have one of each, have a model for each game available for the store. Don't make one where you can only get it through the store.
Yeah, support your local stores. I mean, that's, you know, the new business model, getting people into the stores to play, and you know, get past COVID at this point, would have been a great opportunity. It was definitely missed. So, and then last but not least, in the news, we got some Tyranid previews. Holy cow. That's right, folks. The new campaign book features the big Nids. How would you like bone swords that ignore invulnerable saves?
My answer is the Nightbringer.
Yep, there's a relic called Synaptic Hive Blades. So these things can be mounted on anything that takes bone swords or monstrous bone swords. That's right, folks. You ignore invul saves. But we've got more. How about making your warlord a Death Watch that does this for one turn? You can switch your warlord trait to any of the other high fleets. I was like, what?
Hi, I'm a Leviathan Hive Tyrant. Oh, I'm suddenly a Kraken Hive Tyrant. Blah, 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 blah.
The example they give is, oh, I'm about to get my butt kicked and I need to hold this objective. I'm going to switch over to Hydra and get all the feel no pains from being that. Yeah. I'm like, oh, neat. This one wasn't too awesome, but I guess if you, in the command phase, select one friendly Leviathan infantry beast or swarm unit within 9 inches of the warlord, which is, that's pretty big radius, till the start of your next command phase. Each time the model in that unit makes an attack, you can reroll the hit roll. Eh.
Hmm. I mean, that would be really useful on something like a Moloch or a Trigon or a right. Tyrannifex or something.
So, interesting. I'm getting more excited about Tyranids, but not sure if that book is on the way in December. It's one of those mystery codices or not. So
no, because it's going to be a codex, and this is just stuff from the new Warzone, which I thought I heard something about it going. It's going up this Saturday.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Robert, what were you going to say?
Oh, it's because of the fact that this Warzone book is featuring Tyranids and something else. I think this is supposed to be the tie-in for the end of the Orc wave and then the start of the Tyranid wave with their reboxing, because I'm pretty sure they're the book that's coming out in December, along with, cross my fingers, Custodes. But
we shall see. And then last little bit when it comes to new stuff, I had always one of those I kind of go, Imperial Aeronautical Imperialis came out with some new models. And I'm kind of like, wow, those would be really cool to have in 40K. So, anti-aircraft guns, as well as a new type of bunker for Space Marines. And for those of you Eldar players who want your Firestalker back, they made it into a battery. So you have a choice between the multiple lances or the Nightspeeder version and a much cooler version of the Webway portal, which I'm so angry about. I might just buy two or a three so I can build my own to look that way. Yeah,
well, maybe that's why it's not showing up in the from codex. What I They're saw. They're going to replace it with a new one.
Maybe.
And it'll be Craft World only.
From Sorry, what I Eric. Saw, you would need to buy two.
So mad.
They'll make it both. You have to buy two, no, and it's Craft World only. Harlequins do not need it.
That's the thing that's so bad about the current one, in addition to, you know, good luck trying to place it. All the stratagems that make it work are in the Harlequin Codex. So, you know, if you had it, I'm like, okay, I have my minimum patrol of Harlequin so I can make these things work. Ah, pain in the neck. Anyway, so that is all your new products.
You've got the most competitive army right now, and you're complaining because of a terrain piece.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, everybody says that too. They're like, oh, okay, you know, what do you have to complain about? And I'm like, what? You know, it wasn't that long ago. It was less than 3 years ago. I was at a tournament, and a certain internet personality I was playing against in a tournament, literally looked over at me like, oh, you play Dark Eldar? You best not be into competitive play. In which case, I went on tilt and probably lost the game because I determined the table this bastard instead of actually winning mission, and actually took my models off objectives so I could kill more of his stuff. But yeah, how the times have changed. So actually, yeah, with the Akatu Onslaught coming up on November 6th and 7th, I've actually had to come up with a new Ringer army just so I could be a little fairer to poor players that have to play. So. But anyway, yes, if tickets are still available for the event, I've been steadily making terrain, and player package should be out this week, making the final touches there. So we should probably see that Tuesday or Wednesday, most likely Wednesday. And should be a pretty cool event. I'm very excited about it. But definitely get your tickets in. There's quite a few people who have said they're coming via Facebook but have not bought a ticket. The sooner the better, because I do need to give a head count to the venue by probably about the time you're hearing this episode. So make sure to get your ticket in. If not, let me know. You direct message me. I bought a ticket, so maybe I can beg and plead to the venue to give us the space. We have extra space available, but I have to reserve it 2 weeks before the event.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
We have other events, though, that happened this past weekend, so I just want to go over those results, right? You have the Magic Thinking Pad available to
yes.
you? All right. Let's start off in lovely Sweden for the Fantasia Fantastic XL.
All right, so in fifth place, Max Persson playing Adeptus Sororitas. In fourth, Jonas Halbaum playing Grey Knights. Third, Tim Norden playing Dark Angels. Second, Magnus Forslund playing Adeptus Sororitas. And in first, Rickard Nilsson playing Cult Mechanicus.
Interesting. Even in Sweden, same teams keep winning, same factions. I'll head a little bit further to the east to Merriott, England for the Cadian, not the Canadian, which I almost said, Cadian Catastrophe.
Right, in fifth place, Dean Murphy playing Chaos Demons. Fourth, Jay Seabura playing Grey Knights. Third, Matthew Edgington. I apologize, playing Cult Mechanicus. And second, Stephen Box playing Adeptus Sororitas. And in first, Liam playing Drakari.
And Demonless is pretty interesting. He's got two Keeper of Secrets, a minimum block of Demonettes, then the second patrol, he's got another Keeper of Secrets, followed by two blocks of 20 Blood Letters, and then Bellicor followed by three Plagueburst Crawlers. So, interesting list. Into the Hellstrom 6, staying in Merriott, Old England.
In fifth place, Henry Bairn, playing Thousand Sons. Fourth, Nick McDade, playing Dark Angels. Third, George Twyman, playing Slaanesh. Second, Josh Roberts, playing Adeptus Astartes. And in first, Manny Chima, playing Cult Mechanicus.
It's really cool seeing Josh Roberts back on the tournament scene. He was the terror of England during 5th edition. He was captain of their, then it was called the ETC team. And his brother Nathan was an equal terror. The two of them, actually Nathan did most of the painting, but he was also a very strong player. But it was Josh Roberts. He was completely unstoppable. And then of all things, he actually went to work for Mantic Games and was actually one of their playtesters and promoters of the game. We hadn't heard from him since maybe early 6th edition, so glad to see him back on the competitive circuit. And obviously, not rusty at all as he comes in second place.
Yeah, and if they were scoring off of battle points, Josh actually would have taken it, but because Manny went undefeated, that's why he ended up in top seat.
And with Space Marines, of all things. It's pretty crazy. Staying in England, it was a popular weekend to be in England. A Glasshammer Open.
In fifth place, Tom Layton playing Drakari. And fourth, Danny Evison playing Iron Hands. Third, David Gaillard playing Cult Mechanicus. Second, Kenneth Knott playing Jakari. And in first, Malik Amin Rubio playing Cult Mechanicus.
It's interesting, your top two finishers from the LGT each win a GT this weekend. So, impressive. Finally, going back to stateside, we are ending to Lansing, Michigan, to the Michigan GT. What's our top five look like
in
there?
In fifth place, Jason Snigowski playing Orcs.
I had no idea how you're going to pronounce that, but that sounds good to me.
Fourth, Michael Serapata playing Skitari. Third, Kramer Doyle playing Cult of Strife. Second, Thomas Ogden playing Cult Mechanicus. And in first, Brad Chester playing Drukhari.
All right. So Brad making a stake to get himself back into the top three for the ITC standings. And then last but not least, this event needs special fanfare. It's called the Battle for Salvation. It's in West Nyack. For those who don't know, it's right up the Hudson River from New York. And what makes this event year after year so impressive is it is a who's who of the top players on the East Coast. It is just a murderer's row. This is by far, if you were doing ELO type scoring, you would see your scores just balloon if you could do well at this tournament. So, Ray, take it away. Who are top five
fifth
in this
place
event?
Josh Schutz playing Forces of the Hive Mind. Fourth, Sasha Edelkrot playing Black Templars. Third, Daniel Walmuth playing Adeptus Sororitas. And second, Anthony Vanilla playing Drukhari. And in first, Sean Naden playing Drukhari.
So that should give Sean a big push to maybe catch John Lennon for top spot in the ITC. Just give you an idea how thick this competitive is. Sixth place was Mark Hurdle. He's the top Cult Mechanicus player in the country. Seventh place was Alexander Fennell. Ninth place was James Watkins. He was another top player from 5th and 6th edition, took a few editions off, and is back in the game. 10th place, TJ Lanigan. And then you get knocked down a little bit further. TJ Myers coming in 18th. And as I mentioned, Kurt Klaus coming in at 24th. And there's this former Team America player. So it's just a thick field of top players. So yeah, if you can navigate your way through this field, hat goes off to you. It's always one of the most competitive events on the docket.
Yeah, it's a little jarring to me when I look at it, because each of the players only have three scores, but I'm guessing that's because they break it down into like brackets or something.
It's considered
that.
A Nova format. Back in the old days, you know, this was, you know, one of the four or five GTs that were in the New York, New Jersey, DC, Philadelphia area, and they all use the Nova bracketing system. That's always been how they've done things. And so that's always come back. Yep.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Don't have time to go over it today, but just a interesting fact. Also this weekend, there were not one, not two, but four team tournaments. So clearly the team tournament format is growing in popularity. So we'll see that that trend continues over the next few months as we round out the 2021 season. But without further ado, we have some celebrating to do. Episode 200 is tonight. That's what you're listening to now. Ray, can you believe it's already been 200 episodes?
It's crazy to think about.
I barely remember our first episode. I really don't. It seems like so long ago.
I'm pretty sure our first episode is about 99% you talking and me going,
So clearly nothing to listen to. Oh my God. So yeah, pretty terrible. So yeah, it was fun to get back into the podcasting seat again. Something doing a little bit different than we did before. And so Robert, you've prepared something for us tonight as a surprise. Lay it on us. What do we got?
Well, to keep things short and sweet, you guys have 12 questions to pick from. I swear a Harlequin got in my mouth. But yes, you have 12 questions to pick from. It's classic Jeopardy. The categories are basic lore questions, basic gameplay, and then the good old subject of internet joke.
All right. Have you determined who goes first in this? Or do we buzz in by just like blurting something out?
No. I'm going to pick a number through 1 and 10, and whoever gets closest gets to pick the first one.
All right. Seven. I choose eight.
Seven. You, I already said it before Eric did.
Oh, Ray got it. Well, I couldn't hear you over Eric. But the number I picked was 4. So right. Ray goes first. So the questions are worth 1, 2, 3, and 500 points for the ones that I find a little bit harder.
All right, well, so, I'm going to start off with my strongest choice out of those. So I'll go with the lore, and I'll start with the 500.
Okay. So, which chapter attacked the Iron Cage after the Siege of Terra?
Okay, real quick. Do I need to say it in a question, in the form of a question?
Yes, just like in Jeopardy.
Okay, what is the Imperial Fist?
Yep, you got that one right, Ray.
Takes a commanding lead.
And I get to choose the next one, too.
I don't know most... Yep, and I didn't know most of the Siege of Terra lore, so that's why I was like, hey, that one might be hard. Nope, I was wrong. So...
Okay, let's go with the internet. Internet joke 200.
All right. What is the hardest orc to find?
Oh, what is purple?
I'll let that one slide. That's your one let go, there, Mr. Lucky Kid.
Hey. Eric didn't say anything, so I had a chance to re-say it.
All right.
Hey, if Eric would have said it in the form of a question before I did, I would have totally said he'd got the points. But he didn't.
I know, I'm just giving you crap because you're a silly human.
Oh my goodness. Alright, go ahead, Ray. You got control of the board.
Alright, let's round it out with something from the rules. Let's start off easy.
What type of gun can be used while you're advancing?
What is assault?
What is assault?
Ah, Eric got it first.
Yay, I got one. I got 100 points. That's right. We'll do same category for 200.
All right. What action can be done in your opponent's turn while you're within 3 inches?
What is heroic intervention?
You finished it before I did.
Yeah,
so I was going to say strategic, and I was like, that's not right. It's heroic intervention. I'm like, damn it, I said it wrong.
I also think there may be a little bit of a... What's the word?
What is lag? I got 200 points for that. All
right.
All right. So, Ray, you still have the board.
Let's go with the next highest for... All
right. What is the event that included both Necrons and Eldar?
What is the war in heaven?
Eric, nope. I don't think you're coming back from this one unless you hit the big red button.
There's a daily double in there somewhere.
Go for Internet Joke 100.
Magnus
nothing.
Did
what? Nothing. What is nothing?
Hey, Eric, got it.
No, I didn't. I said it first, but it lagged on me again.
Well, I still gave it to Eric, so.
You are the judge. Here.
Let's do Internet Jokes for 300. I believe that's still available.
All right. What is the thing that beats both Thousand Suns?
What is a vacuum?
Ah! Yeah, you got that one, Ray.
I've never on, heard Eric. That before yeah, in my life.
You're a Drukhari player. You're supposed to be fast. That's the
joke of my life. Okay.
It's pretty simple if you think about it. What makes dogs go nuts and takes care of dust? A vacuum.
Okay.
Let's do another one of the internet jokes. The highest one.
The only one that's left is 500.
Yep.
All right. So, what is the biggest joke that Abaddon tells himself about his Black Crusades?
What if they're all successful?
Oh, wrong answer.
That was close. One.
Is that he beat Cadia?
Okay.
So close.
Because Cadia still stands.
All right, Ray still controls the board.
All right, let's go with another lore one. Clean them out.
There's 100 and 200 left because you picked jokes, right?
Yeah, 200.
What location has Ahriman been trying to get
into? What is the Black Library?
Aha, Eric got it.
Once again, I said it first, but I'm being lagged out. Damn it, Eric. I swear it's all your fault.
I'm just glad I got the Eldar question that was hidden as a chaos question. we'll do the same category. Was it 100 slash? Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah. Where's the home of the Empire?
What is Holy Terra? What is Terra?
Yep, Eric got that one. Yay, Eric actually has 500 points.
All right, we'll do gameplay for 200. I'm sorry, Ray 300 then.
What terrain feature gives the benefits of it without being in or on it, and this is the only daily double I have in the table. In
or in it. I need to hear the question again.
What terrain, I guess not feature, but what terrain keyword gives the benefits of that terrain without being in or on it?
But oh, close what is obscuring?
What is obscuring?
You are both incorrect.
Wow.
What is an obstacle?
Oh, yeah, you only have to be within 3 inches of it. Yeah, okay.
I don't remember those.
Yeah, okay, got it.
All right, that just leaves gameplay for 500. Here. What unit keyword suffers from flying along with building interactions during the charge phase?
Dun, dun, dun. Benefits from flying.
But suffers from building.
I would say, what is a monster creature?
Well, you are both wrong. It's actually
okay.
Because here's the argument. I run into it with my Vanitari all the time. My Vanitari are infantry, but they have jetpacks. Well, in charging while flying, you cannot fly through buildings. You have to fly around. But they also have the infantry keyword, so they benefit from being inside terrain, but they have to charge around terrain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now I see it. Ah. Well, it was a lot of fun. Thank you, Robert. That was pretty cool.
Well, Eric, yep. So, resounding score was in the favor of Ray at 1,500 points, and Eric only got 500. Hey, at least he got a 5.
So, curious to see how you guys did at home. You can always. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was a good trip. We should make this a regular segment. This would be a lot of fun.
I mean, let's be honest. The only reason I won is because of lore.
Yeah, my lore is pretty weak, so.
Yeah, me being honest, is like, when I went to
say next time I can have some fun. Next time I can have some fun and drill you guys on the lore.
Oh, God.
I lose that one.
It would be a great category. It's just they pronounce the following. You know, like, oh, I don't know.
Oh, the fighting never ends on that one.
How do you pronounce X unit from Forge World Custodian?
Yeah, I mean, that'd
no, be no, a, okay, a, no, really serious. Here's a serious one. How do you pronounce the first name of Abaddon?
Isn't it Ezekiel?
Go look it up. Go look up how it's spelled, and then tell me what you actually think, which way you think it's pronounced.
All right, let's see if I can find it.
I'm about to say, because his first name is actually Ezekiel, right?
I think
it is. At least, but the problem is how they spell it. Half the time, the authors are reading it. They read it the way because of the way that they decided to spell it. Did you find it, Eric?
Yeah, give me one second. Yep, it is Ezekyle. Ezekiel, yeah.
Ezekiel.
So here's for bonus points, pronounce the name of his sword.
Okay, so... Ooh,
I don't know that
one. I've heard it pronounced two ways. Draknion. And the other way I heard it, which I actually think is really cool, and I could actually see it being more correct, is Drakenion. It's because the trick is the apostrophe.
That's impressive. And then another one I was thinking, I saw it earlier today. We all know who Vect is. How do you pronounce his first name?
Asdrubal.
I looked at that one. It's Abe. What's up, dude?
Yeah, I don't know Vect's first name because he killed me when I tried to find it. So,
or was it? It's just agents.
Yep, agents of.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, that could be our new thing.
Here's some fun. Who did Halbrecht lose his hand to?
Halbrecht?
It was Halbrecht.
I was about to say, I know Dorn lost his hand. I think Halbrecht still has
one of his hands. I can say with 95% certainty he lost one of his hands.
He must be a Jedi, then.
Well, because I know Dorn lost his hand in a fight with Alpharius.
No, I thought he lost his hand during the events of the Iron Cage.
I guess I might just be thinking of the image that shows him fighting Alpharius and Ogamound. That's a fun one to pronounce. How do you pronounce that Primarch's
name? So confirmed. Halbrecht did lose a hand after being defeated by the Storm Lord, Imhotep.
Way to go, skeleton boys! Yeah!
Some crazy stuff going on there.
Hey listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can just swap out those boxes and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models. And when you order, they come fast. The order is right. And for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com. And when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus podcast.
All right, let's go over the ITC top 10. Well, more pronunciation in later episodes. Your top 10 as of this recording, and not all the events from this past weekend have been tabulated, so this may change later in the week. Check out our Facebook page. We'll have a little graphic with our top 10. Actually, do the top 25 and see who the mover and shakers are on the top of the ITC. But as of this recording, in 10th place, Nick Nonavati. 9th place, Mark Hertel. 8th place, James Keeling. Goonhammer fame. 7th place, Manny Chima, who took a win over the weekend. 6th place, Ben Cherwin, who was idle this particular weekend. 5th place, Colin McDade. In 4th place, Sean Naden, who was the winner of Battle for Salvation. However, that event has not been tabulated yet. 3rd place, Jack Harpster. 2nd place, John Lennon. And with the big win at the Michigan GT, Brad Chester leapfrogs to 1st place by a mere 7 points over John Lennon. So we'll see if that holds between now and the end of the year. For team championships, pretty no surprise who's on top, but your reigning top five, I should say. Team Texas in 5th, Team Battle Brothers in 4th, Frozen North Gaming in 3rd, Glasshammer in 2nd, and Art of War with a commanding 159-point lead for 1st place.
No, I honestly thought John still had the top spot. I guess
lots could change between now and the end of the week. So there's quite a few events have not been tabulated. And, of course, there's going to be a few more events still left to go. We've got, for example, FLG has their New Orleans event coming up. And, of course, we have usually this time of year, there's a couple other big events still rolling around. And, of course, LVO, which is, believe it or not, 4 months away, 3 months away. So,
yeah, that's going to be a hard one for me to prepare for.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how that all shakes out by then, because not just in terms of players, but, you know, COVID restrictions, flight restrictions. You know, Jim originally was saying he wouldn't be able to make it because getting into the country. Now that may not be the case.
And let's not forget, we've got 2 more codexes coming out. So it could be a whole different game by then.
That's very true, Ray. That's very true. So I'm going to give my long shot now. I say John Lennon takes this season.
You know, you got a pretty good point there. One of the stats that we ran, and I have to run it again, is, as you know, the standings are based off your top 6 scores. And the last time I ran this, I was surprised because John Lennon does kind of his own worst enemy when it comes to that, because he's done so well. There wasn't like, if he like does really well in another event, he's not going to get a lot more points. I think he only had like 40 or 50 points of wiggle room. Where some of the other guys, like Anthony Vanella, who had a big run today, he had like almost 100 points. So he could actually leapfrog some of these players. But, you know, depending how big LVO is, and if you may not even have to win LVO, just get enough points to get, you know, maybe at least make it to the cut line, he may have enough points to take it. But we'll keep monitoring that. Yeah, prior to tonight, Anthony was in 13th place. Don't forget also Johnny Velasquez, who's also been in and out of the top 10. Matt Root's making a quick push towards the end of the year. He actually won the, I just blanked on the name, the War Master General, I believe it's called, the Midwest Circuit. And also got Charlie Andre, who's been doing really well. And then, of course, you got Mark Perry down in 19th place. He's the one who upset John Lennon in the last New Orleans Open. So still a lot of room. And then, of course, the last thing, if we can get Nick Nonavati out of the commentator booth, he may make a run still. He's got a lot of room because I believe, I'm going to look it up now, his 6th place event, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, is an RTT with what's only 163 points. So it's, assuming he wins a GT, that which are running about 230 points right now, he could pick up 80 points just from one event, just, you know, to positive. So that would really vault him to the top 5 at least. So let's double check that math there. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, we'll check that math later. But yeah, more of that will be on the Facebook page as well. So check that out as we get closer and closer towards the end of the season. Gentlemen, any other parting thoughts before we wrap up episode 200?
Nope, I just hope I become a more regular because this is a lot.
I appreciate you coming in, celebrating with us. Jim, we hope you're celebrating wonderfully with your family. Ray, it's been a wonderful 200 episodes and look forward to another 200 episodes working with you. And a last minute congratulations, former guest on the show and still big time friend of the show, Don Husen, got married this past Friday to his lovely wife. Yeah.
Woo!
So he and I now have something in common. We both share the same wedding anniversary. So, Don, if you need help, I'll give you a reminder. we celebrated on Friday with my Warhammer widow, and was a wonderful celebration. And then after she fell asleep on the couch, I went outside and painted terrain. So it was a wonderful night. Absolutely.
Productive.
It was really cool. It was kind of a weird serendipity. I was going to do takeout, and I went over to AJ's, which is one of our Arizona's kind of, how would you say, upscale grocery stores? Yeah.
Fancy.
Yeah, fancy. And total serendipity. Their special for, you know, the take-home, you know, reheat dinner special was beef Wellington, which is what we served on our wedding night. It was like, awesome. I'll take three of those to go.
Little coincidence.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. But that's the big celebration. So anyway, we will be back next week. Again, more updates on the Facebook page. And of course, if you've not purchased your ticket for the Akatiu Onslaught, now is the time to click on that PCP app and purchase that ticket. Also hit me up for any personal messages if you have questions. Quite a few of you already have with rules questions and stuff. I'm readily available to help you out with that. In the meantime, my name's Eric. And thank you for listening to episode 200 of the Exterminatus podcast. Thanks for everything, guys.
No problem.